10:09 on Friday, February 24th. And it's good to see you all after the holidays in our cold winter time now, our winter meeting. And may I please ask for a roll call of the committee members?
Yes, good morning. We have Mr. Ivan Perone, the treasurer.
Here.
We have Mr. Henry Robinson, vice chair.
Here.
We have Mr. Ian Thomas from the community.
Here.
And we have Ms. Shelley Maloney from the construction. And we also have a guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Richard Pengally from PFM Management.
And do we have anybody on the phone? Do we have any committee members that called in?
Well, we have another guest on the phone.
Leslie, did you want to announce yourself?
Good morning, this is Leslie Bell. I'm just on to facilitate the team portion of the meeting.
Excellent. Do we have a call?
Good morning, this is Laura Howe from PFM FA as well.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Did you get that? Did you get the name?
Yes.
Good.
Is Dane Sheldon joining?
Dane is not on yet. Did he RSVP?
He didn't say otherwise. He does usually call in, but I don't think he's on the call.
If Dane gets on, we'll acknowledge it upon his arrival. So with that, is there anyone else from the public? Not the public member of the committee, but from the public? Because we always take care of those folks. And if someone jumps on the phone or is on the phone and hasn't announced themselves, please do so at this point. Well, we got PFM advisors all over the place. But see, you're advisor, you're not public. So you're allowed to talk during the meeting. The public people who are just visiting, they only can ask questions at the end, but we acknowledge their existence in the beginning. But thank you for. Not a problem, not a problem. We deduct $0.22 off the fee since you're a little bit late, but it's all right. Okay. With that, I would love to entertain a motion for the adoption of the meeting minutes of December 16th, 2022.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? And this will go down in record as the first set of minutes that hasn't had a discussion in three meetings. So I'm very glad to hear that. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Good. Okay. Under old business, investment advisor, PFM Asset Management, market update and summary of quarterly investment report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So you have a printed copy in front of you. I will try to call out page numbers as we go along for anyone to follow along who's on the phone. So, you know, it's.
Do we need the screen?
No, no. We're just going to go through the printed material. I think the projector is not the.
Cooperate.
So, yeah. So I think a couple things have become clear. One, we don't know anything about inflation. No one understands inflation. And certainly not the market. The market had sort of gotten into a mindset that inflation was coming down. It was down off its peaks of, you know, 9.5%. It had come down to 6.4%. And this somehow had established a trend. And since then, there have been several things that have significantly changed the direction of interest rates. So if you jump to page.
Before you do that, I just wanted to make a note for the record that everybody should know that our president of Broward College is now one of the appointed Federal Reserve in the Atlanta branch. So we have a local person again sitting there, and Greg Hale's an excellent guy. And good friends of the district, Broward College and the district work very closely together. Thank you.
Yeah, so page 5 shows interest rates through, the end of the year. What it depicts is the 2-year, which we track closely since it's a good sort of benchmark for where the district is invested. And after a big rise in interest rates throughout 2022, in the fall of last year, interest rates peaked and then started coming down. And then since then, it actually shot back up to the highs again. So last year, the peak was somewhere around 4.73%. The Federal Reserve raised the Fed funds rate up to a range of 4.50 to 4.75%. Historically, we've usually seen that the 2-year peaks above where the Fed ends its tightening cycle, right? So if you, kind of look back, and historically that's been fairly consistent. So you could have said, the Fed just did their last hike, it brought the top rate to 4.75. Peak last year was somewhere around 4.73. Maybe the relationship was sort of holding, even though it was the peak of the 2-year was lower. Well, then we got the jobs report in February 3rd. This morning again, we got another CPI or inflation number, PCE actually, which shows that inflation is stickier than the market was expecting. And we've seen the 2-year actually surpass that prior peak. It had traded down as low as in the, 4.15, 4.11, and now it's back up again to 4.75 as of about an hour ago, right?
So what do you think the impact then is on corporate bonds, rated, good rated corporate bonds or commercial paper? Is it a 2-point spread, 200 basis points, 300, what are they running at?
Spread, in the short part of the market, it's not that high. Maybe further out, but in the period that you invest, it's more in the 70, 80 basis point range.
So it's a little over 5, 5.5, something
yes,
like that.
Yes. And potentially going higher based on two things, right? One, the absolute level of interest rates, the market has repriced all of that. And two, with increasing volatility, that usually pushes out corporate spreads relative to treasury.
That's why I was wondering if it'd be as much as 2, because I know the banks local are lending at 1.5 to 2 over. So that's heavy duty.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
So we've really changed. So a month ago, if I was here talking to you, I'd be talking about recession risk and how interest rates are lower and market significantly lower than where the Fed outlook is. Now, the market is thinking that the Fed will likely be somewhere over 5%, which is what the Fed was saying in its last outlook. They think that when the new outlook comes up, we could see 5.25 to 5.5 as what the terminal rate looks like for the Fed funds rate, which is above the 5.1 that we had in December. So big shift in thinking. Page 6, this is something we talked about before, that the sort of the nature of what's driving inflation has evolved. Initially it started out as being driven by goods, people stuck at home, buying a lot of goods, supply chain issues, COVID lockdowns, places like China that extend for a very long time, really snarling supply chains, and it taking companies a long time to readjust those supply chains to other parts of the world or to compensate in other ways. But that's yielded to stickier services inflation, right? And service inflation is really driven by people and labor costs, and that doesn't move as fast as it does costs related to goods. So this is more challenging, right? To have the inflation kind of be driven and growing in services.
I had heard yesterday, not yesterday, this week, in the Restaurant Association, they're talking about a prediction of 25% increase in beef and pork because of the consolidation in the beef market. That is the, because of the feed and the supply that you brought up, a lot of smaller ranches have sold off their herds. So now it's getting consolidated with the bigger. And then also, this one really shocked me, that China now owns 60-70% of the pork, the pig farms, et cetera, when they bought Smithfield Farms and so on. So I didn't realize that. And that's going to have a hell of an impact on household.
That's interesting. I didn't know that statistic. I mean,
so you can check that, so I just pointed out.
Yeah. China is a huge market for pork because the biggest consumer in the world is pork. You secure their supplies, right? So page 7, you know, is the last Fed dot plot, their outlook. We're expecting a different one or a new one next month. That's likely to show a higher terminal rate for 2023, and probably a shift up for 2024 as well. And as I said before, at the time this forecast came out, for you know a month and some days after that, the market was pricing interest rates significantly lower than the Fed projection, and they completely shifted now based on the data that's come out. Started with the jobs report on February 3rd that showed that there was 417,000 jobs added, and that wage growth was sustained at 4.5%, as well as 3.5%. That would not be the driver of more and steeper inflation. Page 8 sort of shows that old outlook from the Fed futures market, which is the orange line there. The futures market was projecting, 2023 we would get maybe two, then it shifted to maybe 3/4-point hikes in the beginning of the year, but by year end, the Fed would likely be cutting interest rates. I think the view has shifted now that we could see 3 or 4 rate hikes here, back-to-back 25 basis point rate hikes, and that they'd likely hold interest rates for the remainder of the year to sort of keep the pressure on inflation.
I kind of find all these things kind of conflicting.
Yeah.
Because you have data coming out positive, data coming out negative, and how do you reconcile those two extremes?
Yeah. So that, I think that's the issue, right? Is that the market has now moved into this kind of sort of wishful thinking state, right? So they want the Fed to pause, right? So anything that's going to help them believe that, you're going to have strong reactions to. And then when you see the data going in the other direction, you sort of the panic sets in. So you have this extreme fear.
No one's getting anything right.
Well, what was my first statement?
I was surprised
what's
to hear you say that.
Don't know.
That
is exactly what's going on here.
How do I know that anything here is correct?
Let me ask this. With CDs and even savings accounts paying higher interest rates, do you see hedging, you mentioned the Fed is probably going to start to drop interest rates at the end of the year. So it would behoove a CD person, I guess, to go ahead and purchase outward of 2 years CDs as a hedge against the market.
So the Fed is not saying it will drop interest rates. In fact, they're saying quite the opposite, right? So the Fed, even this morning, where the Messenger was on, saying that they are likely to hold interest rates, keep on raising, and hold interest rates. So that's what the Fed is saying, right? It's all of the experts in the market who kind of keep shifting their opinions around, right? Fed has actually been sort of clear and firm on their message that they're going to remain, strong on inflation, even as they were lowering
or increasing rates at a declining rate. So they're still raising interest rates. They've risen at a quarter point, and the one before was 50, and it stepped down from 75. So they're still raising rates, they're pulling back, but they've always communicated that we're gonna, you know, keep the pressure on until we really see confirmation that inflation's coming down.
Okay.
But the market had a very strong view that the Fed was gonna be wrong, that they're gonna miss again, because they clearly got the inflation is transitory, message wrong in 2020 and 2021. And they thought, you know, this picture here, right? This is from, you know, when was this, January, this was done. The market was saying, yeah, you know, the Fed's gonna miss, and they're gonna really have to pull back. Recession risk, you know, 60-65%. So it's the market that would have had this view.
In 2008, 2009, they say throw out the textbook.
Right.
We're in a new paradigm. We're still the same thing now?
Yeah. Right, right. But, you know, what seems clear is that we're not as, well, maybe it's not clear, but there seems to be less likelihood that, you know, we're going to go up another 400 basis points from here, right? So it could be that we're in this oscillatory period before things really cool off and before the effects of these higher interest rates really take hold. And I think there's actually a page in here, page 10, that kind of sort of lays out where the different pieces are.
Can you go back to page 9? I feel like I'm back to the future here. I really have difficulty.
Okay.
You've obviously changed the third blow up, as you said, things have changed from when this was written. Okay? Mm-hmm. But the fourth one is insulting to me. Mm-hmm. That the energy prices surged and we're back to the war in Ukraine and not the administrative's energy policy. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I had the first phone call we had.
We did, yes.
So I gotta send you back that whoever writes this at the company, I want a response on why it doesn't say that. That's a formal request.
Okay.
Because that impacts Europe's prices and Germany and all this other stuff and things like that. But our prices are totally the administration's policy on fuel. And I haven't found one economist that disputes that. Our gas prices are up. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No.
You work there, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Right.
But now I'm formally asking on why that's not here. And please, let's not go around the minutes game again. Let's put it in the minutes. I requested it, and so on. And again, it's not you, I know.
Trying to stay out of politics. They're just trying to stay out of the politics sense, so, or not even impression of that.
Well, I mean, we talked about this, and I think, you know, we shared some information that, yeah, there's, you know, the policies were part of it, a lot of things are part of it.
But it never says it.
Yes.
And it makes a point in the parenthetical Ukraine. It's as if this was written by the White House. And I take great umbrage in that. If it didn't even say the Ukraine piece in here, I might have just kept my mouth shut. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Great catch. Great.
Fair point. So anyway, so we were on page 10, just talking about how the different factors are aligning and what's contributing to this volatility. Because if you look at these different pieces, you can put a lot of weight on them and say, you know, this is the sort of guiding point of where things are going. So the yield curve is inverted, right? Longer term rates are down, and you know, this has been, we don't have the page in here, but you know, if you look back at the last several recessions, that curve inversion has preceded by something like 12 to 18 months, right? So that's a strong signal. We have a very deeply inverted curve. Housing market.
shown slowdown, you know, driven by higher interest rates, really high prices, et cetera. You know, inflation, where we are in the rate hike cycle, the fact that they've risen, increased interest rates so much, would seem to indicate that we're at a pausing point or an inflection point. Manufacturing is lower. But then you start moving to the things that seem completely resilient. The consumer remains strong. There has been an increase in the use of revolving credit, particularly in the lower income, lower credit part of the market. But that's balanced with generally tighter lending standards all across the bank, right? And that applies even to the mortgage market as well, right? And all of the
The employment is impacted, and down here in South Florida, it's dramatic about affordable housing.
Yes.
Okay, so people, you can't find people to work unless you're paying them very high salaries because they can't afford to live here. All right, and that's across government, that's across healthcare, across everything, manufacturing, whatever. From your viewpoint as a company, is that across the country? Or is it somewhat more unique here in Florida because you've got this exodus into Florida?
Yeah, it seems to be outside here. You know, places like here, California, are experiencing the same issue. I haven't really heard.
California's having affordable housing too? With everybody leaving?
Yeah, housing costs are.
Yeah, if you can afford it.
But no, I mean, I haven't heard or talked about any data about what that looks like generally, if that's kind of the problem. But yeah, here it's, you know, very hard.
Because we've got that problem in the district now, am I right?
Probably.
Because I know I've been doing some volunteer work for Hope South Florida, which deals with the homeless. And it's not all the people that are on 95 asking, I don't know, families and so on, like that. And there's actually, and I can't mention names, but there's Broward County teachers, there's firemen, et cetera, that are having difficulty finding affordable housing.
Yep, same thing in Dade County.
Same thing in Dade?
Yeah, Dade's had it for a long time. I think they're building some houses, some apartments.
That's what I'm trying to suggest up here. Yep. You know, not a dormitory, but apartments where you take the profit out and the rent is low enough then. And you get the people to work.
Yeah, but you have that problem for many schools, especially in Central Florida, exact same thing. And everywhere
here, Orlando's having the same issue.
Yep.
Well, the district's going to have to do it directly instead of trying to sub it out to some kind of a developer, because they're going to play games and with the whole process. So.
The only way they can do a develop is if they do what the universities do. They form those partnerships to build dorms so that the developer in the long run does well, and in the short run, the university does okay because the students can afford what it is to move into the dormitories.
Or they could get some of the pension plans to
invest.
To invest. So you try to keep everything clear, but at least make the pitch to the pension plans that when they need to put their money into real estate, since pension plans are diversifying into real estate now, so they can help that process.
We're in interesting times.
I have a question. Inverted yield curve, does that still signify a possible recession?
Yes. I mean, that's historically what has happened. I know the last time it inverted, everyone said, well, this time it's, you know, the term structure of the interest rates are being shifted by QE, negative rates in other parts of the world, affected things, just all these explanations given. And then we did have a recession completely unrelated to any economic factors, right? It was COVID that caused the last recession, but the curve was inverted. So then you look at this pattern, and, you know, it holds through, even though the last recession, there's no explanation for it.
Can you explain that speculation?
I was going to say, he'd be making a lot more money than he's making now. I'd be your agent, we'd put you on TV.
Yeah. So GDP, is that low or high?
It's low and expected to
continue to be low.
To grow.
Because I oh grow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have that on GDP?
Yeah, so if you look up page 10, it shows sort of forecasted
on the right hand side.
Yeah, quarterly rates on the right hand side.
Interesting.
But again, this was based before the recent changes
right.
on what's happening. So it may not be as robust.
Correct.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The one thing I could never understand about GDP. GDP is measured in present dollars,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not measured in historic value or an average and so on. So if there's inflation, so present dollars go up, that to me always falsely indicated the state of the economy by measuring it by GDP when there's inflation.
But you're supposed to, you know, they always calculate a deflator, right, to adjust it to have, you know, dollars.
But do they? That's my question, I guess.
Yes.
That's great.
So usually with the GDP number, there's usually a GDP deflator. It's essentially inflation, so you can kind of use cost in dollar. But yeah, we usually report on the kind of the headline number.
Gotcha. You're teaching us a lot, thank you.
Well, I'm learning some stuff too. But, you know, kind of, I haven't talked about the inverted curve. So, you know, despite the repricing, the curve still remains inverted. So yields did move up, 2 years up, but the 5 and the 10 year still remain below where the 1 year levels are. So there is still an expectation of this recession, but they're really just pushing the timing out. Instead of thinking it's absolutely coming in the second half of this year, now the market's thinking maybe it's next year before that happens. And I haven't seen what the latest, you know, kind of consensus expectation of inflation is. But I'm sure it's still above expectation of a recession, but I expect it's still above 50%.
Is quantitative easing, but then are they still doing that? Is this having some impact to all this?
So they have rolled that back.
Is that really true? Or
that
did they roll it back?
Yes. So they aren't buying in the quantities that they were doing before. So how does this all impact the returns? Well, you know, as you know, on page 12 and 13, one to 3 year index and one to 5 year index returns were down for the calendar year, right? Big rate increase when rates are going up, prices go down on your existing holdings, even though the yields on new instruments are much higher.
So the value goes down, obviously.
Exactly, yes.
If you hold, it could come back if interest rates drop. But right now, that's not being envisioned in the short term.
Say that again. Let me just make sure I'm wrong.
Interest rates go up.
Yep.
The value of the instruments, which have the low interest rate, value goes down.
Correct.
Okay. And as long as you hold, you haven't realized anything. I haven't recognized anything.
Yes.
You realize it. But that works when there's a feel that interest rates are going to come down again.
Yeah, so you know, just to add one little insertion here. So if you hold to maturity, you're going to get your original yield, right? You're going to get your principal back. You bought at 1%, hold to maturity, you're going to get your 1% back, right? You get your original deal. But in the interim, if interest rates go up, then because someone can get something at a higher rate, yours is less valuable, you can go out and sell it, right?
But if you take that, it isn't just that if you hold it till maturity, you'll get your principal back till maturity. But during that period, you've lost opportunity.
Yes.
By not earning what you could have otherwise earned.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm getting at. The theory to hold is great, mm-hmm. when you think it's going to come back, like they did with equities. Mm-hmm. Okay? But with interest rates right now, for us old guys who think interest rates were abnormally low in our lifestyle, they're now back to normal. Mm-hmm. In my jargon, this is normal now.
Some here.
Okay? Yeah. This is what mortgages were at and everything else.
Right.
When we first started out, not really, like 12% when I started out, but now, and so on. So it's a different game. Different game.
Yeah. So it is. So if rates stayed at current levels, you know, your average maturities in your portfolios are, you know, around 2 years, right? So within a year, half of your portfolio will be at these new normal higher interest rate levels. Within 2 years, you know, you've got a 4% portfolio, which is a good thing, right? We'd like them to stay here from an investing point of view.
And if you need immediate liquidity, you're going to take a hit, right?
If you do have to liquidate, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why, you know, the cash flow analysis is used to say, you know, how much can be very conservatively put into these portfolios. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, either the team maintains significant liquidity to meet your significant expenditure needs in the short term.
And that's what you got to wrestle with for the next 12 months,
yeah.
Is liquidity.
Yeah.
Every 12 months, but this next 12 might be even more severe.
Yeah.
We haven't had the hit in property taxes yet, right? We haven't had the hit.
No.
Okay, well, that is going down. But that's what I'm concerned about, is that next year the values will go down. So property taxes will go down, the amount for the schools will go down, and access to capital. But you've been benefiting, the district has been benefiting from the increase in that.
No certification yet.
No. I noticed my last property tax bill. It showed the value of my home down from the previous.
Well, I believe it, because it's starting to show up. It's just not as dramatic as
right.
It was 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
Correct. I mean, it wasn't down by very much, but I took it.
Yeah, but that's because they knew who you were. That's giving a discount.
No, they're tired of him showing up at a value adjustment board and giving them a hassle. So they just so go ahead.
You realize it down next now. Week you get a correction. Not a good
So, you know, kind of moving more into what the short-term market looks like on page 14. We show sector spreads in the 1 to 3 year and 5 year area. And generally, with the rising interest rates, we talked a little bit about the impact of the rise in volatility. Generally, have all pushed spreads out compared to treasuries. We show on the top right corner on both pages corporate spreads are. So a lot more value in that sector than we've seen in the past. Same thing in the asset-backed sector. We actually saw, kind of see here that spread sort of widened out over much of the quarter, kind of pulled back a little bit at the back end of the quarter in the asset market.
Your firm relies on which rating agency?
We use them all as part of inputs into our own
internal. Okay.
Yeah, and then page 16 and 17, it's a good quarter after all the quarters in the year when it was down, everything was down, nowhere to hide. We kept saying that every quarter with kind of the pullback in interest rates and the lower rate increases from the Fed. All of the different sectors were actually positive, and we had positive returns for. Jump to page 23. to just show that everything was in line with the policy requirements in the year and in the half year. Page 27 shows just a summary of the 1 to 3 year portfolio. The effective duration was held in a defensive position while we were going through all of those rate increases, so slightly defensive compared to the benchmark, a little bit shorter. They've been moving the portfolios closer to neutral to the benchmark as we're kind of in this, you know, more sort of sideways movement through the course of the year here.
Is there anything major we should be looking at for the next quarter to two quarters from a policy standpoint, stuff that's in our control and working with you? Okay, and because in these trying times now, we're required to at least ask, you know, what you think, because we want to maximize our situation.
You should ask that every quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, the moves feel dramatic, the shifting of, you know, the Fed's last rate increase, and everyone's saying, well, you know, the Fed's going to, you know, maybe overshoot, to now a big jobs report came out on February 3rd, and the shift, you know, it feels like we're going to be in this kind of volatile bouncing back and forth as the market sort of tries to find its way through here. And it doesn't seem like there's any major thing until we hit up against some type of recession, you know, stronger recession.
And the reason I ask is twofold. Number one, most people are beginning to believe that high tech is in a recession, mm-hmm. with all the layoffs and everything's going on. And when I say high tech, I'm talking about the internet and so on. And I know we're invested in Apple, right? That's one of them, mm-hmm. okay? My second thought is that with the food situation, we're in Nestle's. So I'm just picking those two as examples for conversation as to say, is that a good thing right now or not? Or just hold the course?
Yeah, you have small holdings in any one name, any one sector, and you own short-term debt, right? So the biggest factor is the Fed with any of these, right? All of these are big, you know, well-capitalized companies. If they're able to have the credit rating and volume for you to be an investor in them. So we don't have any calls on any of the sectors or anything that we're watching right now. Maybe that, you know, changes next quarter, but we don't really see anything on the horizon that would change that. The biggest thing right now really is some dramatic change in that causes the Fed to have a different direction in interest rates immediately. That's what we're seeing.
So I might ask, if we could add a page at the end of your report. And it can be blank. Say we recommend no change in policy. We recommend no anything. Let's just have it in here so that we always hit that just as you're coming near your end of finishing. That makes sense, committee? That we do that. And even if it's blank, no change recommended. But if there is, then it's a regular formal part of our report. And I'm starting to see this happen with other organizations that I'm familiar with, where there's a lot of funds held in a treasury function. And again, it may say absolutely nothing other than nothing recommended this quarter. And I think the school board would appreciate that because that's what they're looking at. They're looking to us, I should tell them.
So what would you think would be a change in Fed? What kind of investment that they would
inflation comes out of 2%. So, you know, something dramatic like that. I think their moves, they expect some time for them to really take hold, and they expect to see a lot of moving data before I think they're going to change their policy standpoint, right? So they, you know, they're looking a year, 3 years, you know, 5 years in the future.
so I don't say it's reactionary. You would take something like what we saw with the pandemic being declared, right? So,
I mean, there's talks of another pandemic coming on, might be another rising. Heard some internal part of that.
Yeah, I.
They just ready to implant, right? They're coming out. Is it April or May? Yeah, they announced it's over.
I hope so.
No, I've heard the same thing you have, that there's another one maybe on the horizon, but now they're ready to kill the other.
I have Bill Gates on that this one.
Yeah.
Any geopolitical issues in the last that could affect the best to?
Taiwan.
Sure, yeah. I mean, any of those, any flare up like that, that then spills over into something that causes a dramatic economic shift could impact that. But that's kind of always a sort of, you know, overarching kind of geopolitical risk out there.
It's like when the stock market took jitters, when that Air Force General put out that memo and said that he anticipates we need to plan that we'll be at war with China by 2024 or by 25. That shook up everybody. I don't know if he's still going to
be. A shooting war. You mean a shooting war, right? Or
a war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we already have a war going on. It's fought differently now.
A non-economic war.
Non-economic.
No, you're right.
Question regarding prime rate. I was checking on my documents the other day and noticed that a loan agreement, my HELOC, mentions prime rate plus a certain number. And I said, well, let me check what the prime rate is. It's 7.75 now. So other than myself as a person with a home equity loan, who else is interested in the prime rate, and how does it affect those other parties that use it in the bank?
Yeah, I can't speak that. You know, I don't really follow.
So corporations are not really going to banks to borrow at this point anymore, right? They're basically accessing the market at lower rates.
Yeah, I mean, they borrow at, you know, these kind of corporate interest rate levels. I mean, maybe small businesses, I just don't.
The big ones do this, but the small companies, what I was telling you, right now I'm working on a bunch of deals, okay? It's two over, okay? 200 basis points over. So the Fed may be at four and change or almost five. I'm telling you, you're borrowing at 7 and 8.
Yeah, that's a big amount.
Yeah.
And for the young businessmen, the ones in their 40s, who think life is 1.5%, 2%, becomes 3. When they talk to me, I sit there and say, what are you complaining about? I remember when it was 12 and 14. Are you serious?
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah, that was Volcker time, right? Yeah.
Jimmy Carter.
What else here? So, turn page 20, sorry, page 33 and 34. Here we went to 3 in the portfolio returns. They were positive for the quarter, 72 basis points on a gross basis versus the benchmark was 73 basis points. The underperformance was from two places. One is because we had a defensive position with a duration a little bit lower. That kind of quarter where you have that shift and we aren't neutral, you know, underperform a little bit. Even though we overperform when rates are rising, when we have a defensive. The other thing is that the asset backs that you hold in the portfolio, because spreads widen out during the quarter, they underperform relative to the other the sectors that are mentioned.
So the negative $2 million of first quarter 22 or the fourth quarter 22, what is the actual base amount? How many dollars do we have now that are under investment?
What is the size of the portfolio?
Yeah.
Is it 92 million?
$92 million, $90.3 million. And does it go up, Ivan? Do we contribute to it? at all?
Not recently.
So we haven't developed any surpluses that have gone back in there. So it's pretty much the balance, other than investment increases.
Yes.
Any idea how long that is, Ivan?
It's been a while.
Like 3 years, 5 years?
Since we've had it.
Yeah. Because that's an important thing, committee, we've got to realize. They can do a great job, but if we're not increasing our reserves, or what I call investable dollars, all right, we're not helping ourselves for the future. Every organization that requires perpetuity, and school education does, needs to have reserves for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's why we had to go for the 80 million, and we had to do this, and we got to do that, et cetera. And it's going. So we got to reserve for the future. We should be trying to work on some strategies that get you more money to invest.
Well, we can refresh our cash flow analysis if we've got that for a little while.
Okay.
And that's nobody's fault in this room. I'm just saying that's an operations issue.
Ivan, you pulled down interest earnings occasionally, right?
Okay. Yeah, so that doesn't even compound.
Right.
And with the dramatic, I think it's dramatic, you guys would know better than me, enrollment's down, right?
Basically, yes.
And this 90 million is not just any particular fund. This is just overall portfolio.
All the stuff that's
I mean, all you know, like capital and general fund, is it?
I don't know if this is 90 million on the operating.
Yes, I believe so.
So that's
general fund. Million operating, what, 2 million for the
or is
yeah.
insurance?
Consolidated.
Yes, mostly excess funds that this week.
It's not the insurance fund.
Not
oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Because the insurance fund's a couple hundred, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The insurance fund is the one the portfolio here is a couple of million. So yeah, 3.2 million.
Okay. Oh, well, yeah, I'm more than I wish it was.
Yeah. That
one does get contributed to because that all applies to your insurance policy, right?
Yeah. When they, if they tell me that they want to take out of the insurance funds to put into this, that's when I fund this portfolio.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I have not been told to do that in a full while.
Jump to that one. Page.
You're doing a hell of a job here. I compliment you.
Yeah, I agree.
Page 77 and 79. So this portfolio is a little bit longer than the 1-5 portfolio. So the returns are a little higher. You're at 26. Versus the benchmark at 0.94, so the same factors contributed to the slowing of performance in that portfolio as well. And of course, the positive return for the quarter. See what we get for first quarter 23. It's been positive to this point, but with the run up in growth after the inflation data today, okay. We'll see where we end up.
And the only one in there I got concerned about was the Microsoft. Because of the high tech recession.
Yeah.
So I did have one other point that I wanted to bring up. Questions on the numbers, you know, which is that there was a bill introduced earlier in the week. Government just introduced the bill.
Bill HB3, Article 3, that has a number of parameters in it. Specifically, one of them that kind of relates to the investment community around ESG investing, right? And would create prohibitions around having ESG be considered in investment activities. I think it may also have some impact on the.
Everybody understand ESG? For the record, can we just?
For the record, so it's a term used to describe. Investing methodology, a way of structuring portfolios based on factors called environmental, social, sure. and governance factors. Shorthand is ESG. And I guess the way the text is written would say you cannot consider non-pecuniary factors like ESG in making your investment decisions. Traditionally the way it's worked is that an entity could decide we want to have ESG, we want to have an ESG overlay, we want to consider ESG in addition to credit parameters, and you have to proactively incorporate that into your investment policies. And some entities have, you all don't, and it's not a fundamental part of the way you manage money. The state, months ago, pulled $2 billion away from BlackRock because of their, I don't know.
Now, the bill you're citing is a state or federal?
State. State bill, yeah. So the state pulled $2 billion away from BlackRock because of BlackRock's, incorporating ESG or sustainability as a part of their, investment methodologies. So we've received questions from a number of other local governments saying, are you all using ESG in your portfolio ESG? The answer is no. Same thing for you all. No, and that's not part of what we do unless requested. You ask us, if you come to us and say, look, we're a school district, we don't want you investing in, tobacco companies, alcohol companies, whatever the case may be, we'll do that, right? Because we work for you. So I do want to highlight that. I encourage you to go check out the bill. It'll certainly send you a link to it. You may have other requests or you may get questions around that. Is that something that you all are doing here? And you can't even really say, absolutely not. So.
What are they trying to accomplish? I mean, what's the end game? What are they trying to accomplish?
To stop what they think is a game. In other words, the ESG is a game. So they're trying to stop the game. Okay? Now you may not agree with that.
Before it starts.
Okay? And I'm sitting here telling you, as one of the ones who thinks it's a game, which is why you just heard that, I'm in favor of stopping the game.
Okay?
Yes. Gotcha.
So I will say, from a personal point of view, that I think ESG needs to go through another rebranding, and here's why. I think the tools of ESG are fantastic, right? From a management point of view, right? And the proof of that is that the state itself actually uses Morgan Stanley's ESG tools for its governance checks, right? So you know that in state code it says that you can't invest in certain scrutinized companies and scrutinized countries, related to Sudan, Iran. You also can't invest in companies that boycott Israel. The tools that the state actually uses to monitor that are Morgan Stanley's ESG tools, right? And Sustainalytics, right? So these are all developed.
But they don't call it ESG on Morgan Stanley.
Something else, yeah.
But it probably has some other name, but Sustainalytics, that's the name of the company, right? So, but the tools are great because what they do is, and all this has developed more recently, is that they're able to go out and really scrape a lot of data and quantify it and put it in a way that you can kind of look through things that we really didn't have before when we were just doing credit analysis. So I think the tools are great, and I think it's a great way for you know, me as an advisor to work with you and make sure that we are really investing in things that you want us to invest in, rather than come to a meeting and you see a name in there and you're like, you know, these people are doing X, Y, Z, why are they in here? And then, you know, it becomes sort of this other thing. It allows us to sort of give you more information, you know, see the controversies potentially before they bubble up, because that's what the tools do.
So we used to just call that selective investing.
But maybe he needs another branding like that. He needs to go back to that. Enhanced investor, or even just the tools, just, you know.
See, because the SEC has a list of gigantic companies, and I'm now working with them, okay, because of Broward College, and I'm now on their foundation board to help raise corporate things on this big campaign that we're starting, et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of gigantic companies, banks, and everybody else who are under that umbrella because the SEC likes that reporting to people, that they're socially conscious as companies. And I think you're 100% correct, but the point is, there's good ideas to do that. The point is, how is it being utilized is the issue, okay? So the Blackstone and the Disney issue is an argument about how it's utilized, which you can agree with or disagree with, but it's how it's utilized. But no, I think bringing it up of us constantly looking at it. Now, I brought up two, not because of ESG, right. I brought up two just because of the state of the economy. That's something I think we need to do, and we appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I know you all are out in public, and people are going to ask you, well, what's going on over at the school district?
I know when I was treasurer, I had a board member wanted me to invest in Israeli bonds, which you can do through USAID, but just, you know, I couldn't explain to it that I can't do it like just buying a CD, you know, to a bank. And she kind of got off that bandwagon.
It was written into the code now, so now you
could. Oh, it is?
Yes. So on the list, if you look at 218-415 in the list of investments,
they lobbied heavy.
Right. Okay. I mean,
they lobbied heavy. Because a lot of investment, there's a lot of investment, Israeli investments that are just sleepers. They're just there. You just put your money. And there's other stuff that really can make a lot of money. But you went through that same cycle that they were pressuring every group in Broward, Dade, and Palm Beach County to invest in Israeli bonds. Mm-hmm. See, you're showing our age again, aren't you?
That's right.
No. Seriously, that's what the situation is.
Yeah.
And they lobbied hard, and they got that in there.
Written in there.
Okay. And I don't think, is there any other one like that?
No. No, that's the only one.
I know there's a lot of you can't do's, which I did like to see.
That's the only one in there.
Great job, man. Are we issuing anything? Are we issuing anything? I don't know.
No.
Ladies on the phone, are we issuing anything? Are you advising us we should? You can take it off mute. Hello?
I can ask.
So, get that in a minute. Which is why we didn't need a report. 29 yards on it.
In July.
Sorry, I was having some issues. The only thing is the TAN, which we'll bring to you at the Finance Committee meeting in May.
I love this. The PAN. And the PAN is.
The TAN, the tax anticipation note.
Oh, okay.
That the district does every year, but no long-term debt on the horizon.
Yeah. Superb. Thank you so much. And why don't no public has shown up? Is there anyone on the phone from the public who has a question or a comment? Being none, once around the room.
Good. Thank you.
I'm good.
I'm good.
This is one thing, Richard, again, for that great presentation.
Super
good. Thank you. Always a good discussion.
No, I love it. I love it. And you'll get back to us in response.
Yes.
To the woke. Excuse me. To the Ukraine.
And I like this format.
I do.
When you hear all boxes on the screen.
Well, I do like it. You can be here to march back.
Yeah, Steve loved that though.
I thought. Except for the two meetings before we put the contract up, then he showed up. He's a good salesman, he's a good salesman. He's very good.
Tell him how you can talk to him.
Yes, please. All right, based on that, following Robert's rules, great grandson, I'm not asking for a motion to adjourn. We are adjourned. Thank you all. See you all in May.